Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, folks. And it's now or never. We're running out of time, as you know. But the good thing is that people are getting active. People are actually acting upon, you know, some of the information that we have and some of the information we're providing. There's a lot of groups out there that are providing good information. I don't necessarily think that, you know, everybody's got their arms around the real paradigm. I think that there's a lot of things that are missing, which is one of the reasons why when people talk about getting training on the Constitution, getting educated on the Constitution, I will tell you that the best way to really understand the Constitution is the ratification debates, because that's where it was sold. That's where they went all out in going through the lines of the Constitution. What does this mean, and what was the intent behind this clause, this part of the Constitution? And so if you get an education that is based on the current existing legal framework and so forth, like you would go to Hillsdale College, you will not really understand the Constitution. That's unfortunate, but you'll get some good information regarding the Constitution, and you will get the status quo, the acceptable part of the Constitution. One of the things that nobody will teach you is what is the difference between the annotated Constitution, or this living Constitution that the federal government is keeping, and the organic, or what we call the actual text of the Constitution that was ratified by the original 13 states, and what ultimately all of the text of the amendments that have been passed. Now, when I say that have been passed, you know, I even include amendments that have been proposed, because some of the proposed amendments, as I've proven, give us insight. Because when Madison made an amendment to change the apportionment, you know, of representation from 30 to 40, then the 40 to 50,000 as Congress grew, it was clear that in the framers' mind, the only way we would be able to change apportionment would be through an amendment. And yet we don't have one, because Congress feels, based on their living Constitution, that they do not have to do things, which is one of the reasons why we have this charge, we have a responsibility of definitizing the Constitution. And I think a part of all of this is the ratification debates, and just like I said, some of these amendments to make sure that everybody has a hard understanding of what that Constitution is. Metaphorically speaking, I look at the Constitution as a rock solid instrument. It is unbending. There's no tolerance for misinterpretation, only those interpretations that were provided during the ratification debates are the legal interpretations. When it comes down to it, now we've talked about this, and we've covered this just recently, when it comes down to something that may not be really cut clear in the Constitution, what do we do about this? If it is in the Constitution, then the court actually has, the federal court has jurisdiction, but when the federal court takes latitude in changing or asserting something is to be constitutional, then what do you do? Well, it's clear. It has to go to the states. So what Congress should do, if the Supreme Court made a ruling and they said, you know, we believe that we interpret this right of privacy, you know, when a woman walks into a Planned Parenthood building, she has this right to privacy, because that was the premise, or the one of the drivers behind the Roe v. Wade decision. and this interpretation by Blackmun, and, you know, these emanations of penumbra that this right of privacy exists within the Bill of Rights. Now, to be clear, the Bill of Rights did not give the federal government a large petri dish to, you know, to experiment with in obtaining jurisdiction. If you really look at the Bill of Rights stated that Congress shall make no law, that they cannot do anything to touch these issues, like the right to bear arms, you know, a person having the right to be secure in their person and all of those things. In other words, Congress can't make a law regarding religious expression or the banishment of teaching religion in education. They cannot make any law respecting religion. And yet they have. Because they said, oh, well, the Bill of Rights gives us this jurisdiction to kind of play with. No. The Bill of Rights were further declaratory reservations or restrictions placed on the government that they couldn't touch these things. And now they're playing with it like it's out on a soccer field, kicking it around and figuring out how they can aggrandize their power. So when it comes down to the final determinations, it always has to come down to the states. And so the states actually need to have one of the things that we need to implement is constitutional compliance, because each county, each state, and counties at the state level, when you're looking at your state constitution, it is the counties that need to be actually communicating and saying, you know, do we agree with this? Or is this something that is out of the ordinary? You know, it's not that we're supposed to have a hostile relationship, you know, counties to the state government and states to the federal government. It is to have a symbiotic relationship to ensure that the intent of these constitutions of preserving liberty and limiting our government is being maintained, because it always is the case that government will try to aggrandize and assume more power. And in some ways that they do that is they ignore some of your rights. So one of the things that we're kind of dealing with, and that's kind of weighing heavily on us, or at least on my mind, is how in Wyoming, in Campbell County, the county commissioners have failed to recognize the right of petition and has failed to recognize their responsibility in actually supporting the Constitution and being the advocates for it. It's just hard for me to fathom how a public servant would take an oath to support, defend, and obey the Constitution, legally take the oath that they will support it, they will defend it, and they will obey the Constitution. And then while they're in office, they just mosey along and watch the Constitution get ignored at a county level, watching it be ignored by the state and watching the state doing things that it has no authority to do and not questioning it. And what really brings this up is, you know, we'll get into this because Mr. Schmidt, who became the senator of Missouri, who was actually being challenged by Paul Venable and a few others, he has already proven himself as a tyrant, because he may be conservative and you may love him because he's out there fighting the progressives, but he is already making assertions that powers exist that don't. And we'll get into that. But let me just do this. Let me just kind of go through the normal stuff I need to cover real quick. If you go to our YouTube channel, Reclaiming the Republic, and you see some of our videos, make sure you subscribe to that. Our subscriptions have kind of popped up, but we want to make sure that you're aware, because when we start actually populating, you know, these courses and so forth, and as a matter of fact, if you miss the upcoming ratification debates, these ratification debates are going to be posted in the YouTube channel, so that we're actually going to have like a little topic directory or whatever we can do. And I don't know how to organize that type of stuff, but I will leave it to the curator of the channel to do that. But what we want to do is we want to have our Constitution course, or my covering, reading the Constitution and talking about how it's being violated, because I think that is one of the most important things a person needs to know, is what does the Constitution say, and what are they doing, or how are they not honoring that, or how is it being violated today? Because if you don't understand, you know, what we're reading and what they're supposed to be doing, and go, wow, well, they're not doing that, they're doing this, that helps our eyes open up to say, we need to assume control again. So make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Now, I've been asking, what type of content do you need covered? And so as I've been discussing with my colleagues and people that we're working with, they're kind of coming up with some of these ideas, such as, you know, the remonstrance on religion. And so the other question I have for you is, in working with organizations out there, what would they bring to the table that would get you to actually be a part of? Now, the one thing I'm thinking in my head is an organization that will actually help facilitate your, you know, your tax-free status. In other words, allow you to help you become a part of a large 501c4 organization, you know, where you would just have to do the filing, or maybe the organization would do that filing. Because I think that that's the one thing that most people have a hurdle with. I think that in technology and those types of things, you know, people can get the messaging out, people can get organized, because with social media, and there's a lot of other ways. You don't necessarily have to have a website, but I'd highly recommend getting a website, getting organized with a, you know, a domain, getting organized in your leadership, and allowing, you know, that organization and that administrative side to be one accessible, you know, for so that everybody around the state and around the country can kind of look into what are you guys doing out there, and, you know, what great accomplishments are occurring, or what are your struggles, so that they can, you know, be prepared in their own communities and so forth. But anyway, we'll wrap this up, and then we'll get into some rants. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so one of the things that I can tell you that you can actually plan on as you start to get organized is, don't think that your county commissioners are going to be really receptive to having you get into their business to the nth degree. As a matter of fact, transparency is one of those things that they, you know, no politician wants you to actually have and be able to scrutinize what they're doing. No politician really wants that. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, and it's tough. It is tough to operate when people can scrutinize over the stupid things. But what's important is the important things. that we should be able to scrutinize whether they're violating the Constitution or not. Not necessarily what they're having for lunch or, you know, some of these personal details or what have you. But if you don't hear and you can't, you have access to how they're discussing the issues, then what kind of let's look at Congress. When Congress actually established, the House of Representatives, because they were, you know, for the people, they were representing the people, they maintained a record of their debates and what they were stating on the floor and how what they said while they were in chambers. Now, of course, they didn't have the technology and nor did they have the budget to have somebody walk around with them and transcribe everything that they said in their private dealings and so forth outside of chambers. But when they were in chambers, it was recorded. Now, the Senate didn't keep any records. I think it wasn't until like 1795, somewhere in there, when they actually finally started publishing, you know, their debates on issues and so forth, which is why you all of a sudden, you know, in the very beginning, you do not see any records of the Senate because they were secret. They started off because who was the vice president when the Senate was established? That was Thomas Jefferson. And so for the most part, he kind of agreed that because they were representatives of the state legislature, that there required a little bit of separation, less transparency for whatever reason. But in 1795 or 96, somewhere in there, they actually started publishing and providing the records. Now, whether they kept records, I think they did keep records, but whether they were available and published, that's a different thing. So anyway, let me get back to what I want to cover before we get into the debates, or actually my ranting. We will get into the debates probably next week or the following. Because, like I said, we definitely want to cover, before we get into the debates, we want to cover Madison's remonstrance on religion. And the reason I want to cover that is because that kind of started to set the tone of religious persecution in America and how more and more people were kind of looking at how these state churches and these unbending paradigms were actually becoming divisive. And actually, one of the rants I want to get into is divisiveness. And so anyway, what is it that you were looking for out of an organization? What can an organization bring to the table for you? When you're really looking at, because folks, let me just say this. This is your organization. When you create your county, and I don't want to say yours. I mean, it is the county's. As a matter of fact, this organization, what you're doing in creating a constitutional compliance, this unregulated militia, what you're doing is actually needs to be integrated into your county government. We need to actually get to a point where your county actually embraces full accountability, full transparency, and citizen involvement. As a matter of fact, why do we have to spend so much money when we need to start mandating civil involvement? You know, I was having a conversation regarding jury duty with an individual, and I say, you know, it's a requirement. So most people that I know that don't do jury duty, they get out of it because they don't get registered. You know, they go get their driver's license, they don't register to vote. As far as I'm concerned, if you're a citizen of a certain age, you know, over 17, you're an adult, then you must be involved in some capacity in your county government. Everybody must be involved. The day of complacency, because the reason why we're in this mess, folks, is because we've become complacent. We've left it to others to govern us. And boy, look at what they have done. Whose fault is this? It's our fault. So when we get ourselves involved and we start providing the oversight, because I truly believe that one of the mechanisms, and we've talked about some of the extra criteria for a constitutional county, and one of those extra criteria is reinstating common law and reinstating a common law court. Well, if you have a common law court, then you can have a common law grand jury. And if you have a common law grand jury, then you can actually start clearing up a lot of the problems that you're dealing with at your county level. Now, just to be clear, a common law court cannot supersede the Constitution, but it can make declarations it can actually drive amendments to the Constitution if they believe that something needs to be changed. But they cannot subvert the law itself. In other words, they don't get to make up the law, because I know that a lot of people would go, you know, in some communities, they would actually start making some pretty horrific laws, or they would ignore certain laws. You have to understand that a common law grand jury is one, it's a fact finding, and it should be driven and controlled by, you know, whoever the court administrator is, and making sure that everybody is functioning and operating in that grand jury, because the power of a grand jury is something awesome. You know, the things that we can do with a common law grand jury at the county level is incredible. We can actually start determining whether our governor and everybody else is, you know, violating the law. You know, if you get to that point, what happens if you at a county get to the point where you have determined that your governor has violated your rights and needs to be removed from office? Then you make that proclamation, but can you enforce that? No, because your jurisdiction is limited to your county. What you have to do is you have to actually get your other counties and help them get to the point where they've got this exit criteria of creating. And when I say exit criteria, I mean, in becoming truly a constitutional county, you are now functioning in this capacity where you actually now have revitalized the premise of a militia being active with your sheriff. Now, some of the problems that you'll have is that you may not actually be able to execute all of these things, but at least you now have and are beginning to work out the legwork of establishing the militia. Now, who's in the militia? Now, when you go to some of these websites and you look at, you know, these websites telling you what the militia is, these are the people that have guns and, you know, they're trained and all of that stuff. Every person in that county should be, every adult should be identified as a part of the militia. If you're age 17 to whatever the top age is of the states. Now, I think in military service, I don't know, 50, 60, 65, something like that. I don't know. But bottom line is every adult is legally bound to have to support the Constitution and defend it with arms. Now, if you go down this path and you start realizing, okay, so we have to defend it. Well, do we have to defend it with arms? No, we can actually defend it in pools of juries and so forth. And if you actually reinstate the militia, you reinstate common law court and all of this, and people go, oh, well, shoot, you know, that's going to be terrible. Well, actually, if everybody becomes an agent to have the responsibility, let's look at it this way. If a doctor is present when somebody needs medical attention and that doctor's identified, he can actually be tried for, you know, negligence and whatever the liabilities are, because he had life-saving training and should have been able to administer if that person would have died. Now, it's the same thing if we look at every citizen in the county being a part of the militia and having this responsibility. Do we not have a liability of enforcing the law and making sure that when a law is being broken, that we don't step up and actually, you know, try to engage in ensuring that the, you know, the law and civil order is being maintained? See, we've become completely complacent, and this is why we're in the situation we're in. when people complain about the law enforcement brutality, and you know, if we were all actively engaged in enforcing the laws and understanding this, how many cops do you think you'd need in your town? How many sheriffs would your sheriff need? The statistics have proven that if you live in a community that is actually everybody is carrying a gun, then crime dramatically falls. Well, so let's take it the one step further. If you're actually carrying a gun and you actually have, everybody has training, fundamental training and so forth in the education system, because that's who should be teaching us firearm safety and all of that, then, and we understand the laws because we have to enforce the laws, then how much crime do you think you would have in your county? Now, the person that comes in new, or the person that, you know, just you know, a transient or somebody passing by may try to get away with the crime, but eventually they will realize, and I honestly see that if everybody has the responsibility of ensuring that the law is being abided by, then all of a sudden we're going to see people and people's behavior improve, because if you're a reckless driver driving down the road, everybody you pass has the responsibility of making sure that you're reported. So, you know, by the time you get to your destination, there should be 14 calls with your driver's, you know, your car license plate number that would actually identify you as speeding excessively. And, you know, in other words, you'd have enough witnesses that if you went into, you know, a court, it wouldn't be you against the cop. It would be you and everybody else. Folks, I'm just trying to help you understand the beauty of a self-governing system. We'll be right back after this promo.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
I believe you'll find in Federalist Paper number 10, it's around there, it's in the very early Federalist Papers, where Madison makes a comment that if men were angels, we wouldn't need government. But because men aren't angels, then we actually have to have, you know, a self-governing system, because when you give somebody the authority, absolute authority, you know, this concept of absolute power, and absolute power corrupts. And so, absolutely. And so Madison also pointed out that, it, you know, the way they've created the system, they made a system so that no man could be a judge of himself. In other words, when you put yourself in a political position and you believe that you can't judge yourself or you can't control your own behavior, or you determine that, you know, like these county commissioners in Campbell County, you know, they don't believe that they have to act upon First Amendment petitions, that these First Amendment petitions of government, to government, for the redress of grievances. And these aren't just grievances of, you know, you're not maintaining my road. These are grievances that the Constitution is being violated, where they have taken an active oath to support it. I mean, I invite you to look at the petitions that Congress had to deal with. I mean, there were petitions in the very first session of Congress, because as I was going through and researching the Bill of Rights, I read at least a few petitions of people coming forward with a curriculum on English and a curriculum on mathematics and those types of things that they wanted to have. And these were more of a petition to Congress to basically create a patent or a copyright on their curriculum, or to have exclusive access. This is what these people, this is what some folks were doing. And it's amazing. You know, you learn so much when you start diving into reading what actually happened, instead of reading what people had read and what they thought of what they read. This is why, if you really want to understand the Constitution, you got to read the ratification debates. This is why we read them, you know, and I'm not, and what I am trying to say is, I understand that many people that, you know, are listening to radio are really listening for entertainment, because you just, it makes you feel good to, you know, see somebody getting their, you know, their pound of flesh, you know, when some conservative extracts some vengeance, when we get a progressive to do a perp walk. And then we get really mad when, you know, a conservative goes down in flames, or we get mad when a conservative actually isn't, you know, like John McCain. Folks, we are at a point almost like Rome, where, you know, we have a circus every day. We are living in the circus. When Rome got to a point where it became so opulent that everybody was at Circus Maximus, you know, every day, who was tending to the government? Who was tending to what needed to be tended to? You know, this 24/7, 365 entertainment industry that is just feeding you and feeding you and feeding you is keeping you from actually taking a stand. And that's why you hear me rail all the time. And especially when I start listening to the conservatives, I suffer just like you do. I hope you realize how you're suffering when you listen to some of these people blather on, because they don't understand the Constitution. And I'll give you some cases in point and some context to this, but let me kind of just wrap this up. The focus needs to be what is best for your county and state in leading you to success. So when I ask you, you know, what do you need in working with an organization? What do you need from them? You know, in working with Reclaiming on the Republic, it's not like we're going to give you everything you need. This is your fight, but we're going to help train you in some of these things. As a matter of fact, we do this on this show. This is not entertainment. This is actually training. This is, in some respects, you know, trying to help motivate you and try to help you get. I mean, the point that I say it's now or never should be motivation enough to realize that we're at the precipice of our demise. And when you realize, you know, the politicians that you keep voting for have no scruples, that they are a, you know, when you realize that I'm right, when I say that our form of government is is a monarchical party, democratic socialist form of government. And when I say that, I mean, I can actually point to how this is all true, because every one of our public servants, almost all of them, we do have good ones. But too many are monarchs. In other words, they're princes, they're princesses, they're dukes, they're duchesses. They believe they're above the law, that now that they have this mandate by an election, whether it be by fraud or what have you, they have the power and authority to inflict upon you what they think is best. They are not governed by the constitutions. They're not bound by the constitutions. We have gone completely sideways because they believe they have that power. And that the power that they wield is driven by the party. Now, and I've told you this, that there are actually two parties in America. And I'm not talking about, or actually I should say two-party systems. There are two separate party systems. There's the governed, which is us, where we have our own party, and this is how people, you know, challenge and replace the governing party. So we have the governed party system, where we have the Democrats, Republicans, Constitution, Libertarian, and so forth. And then we have the governing party system, where they take sides, and just like you saw on January 6th in Congress this year, how they, you know, bickered back and forth of who was going to lead and be able to pick the chairs of the of the committees and all of that that melee that took, you know, how many days? It took about a week to actually get established and get government running. This happens in your state house as well. It is done by the political party system. So when we look at the fact that we're supposed to have a Republican form of government, how is what they do in creating these committees and anointing themselves all of these powers anything to do with our constitutional Republican form of government? Not. The only way we're actually going to have the government that we were given is we actually have to be involved. We have to realize that complacency is not acceptable. We can no longer rely upon the morals and integrity of the people we elect. You know, I'm absolutely amazed at how it, you know, we could see the transcending from a moral nation, moral culture and nation, to how debased and how immoral we've become. Now, the architect behind destroying the world, the architect behind destroying nations and destroying mankind, Satan, you know, he's been doing this for a long time, and he's smart. He's much smarter than I am. He's smarter than any person that I know, even Hawking. If I don't know if you know he's alive, but anyway, it doesn't matter. This guy knows how to actually divide and conquer. He actually has these... this domain knowledge of our weaknesses and so forth. That doesn't mean he's going to win. That only means that if he had the ability and the access, we would have been doomed in the very beginning. But because there's been this separation, that we actually can do the right thing, that we have the agency to choose for ourselves, and we have to start doing that. We have to start choosing to do the right thing. We have to start choosing to do, you know what? Sometimes it's more difficult. It's going to take you effort. It's going to take your time. Yeah, you know, life can't be a vacation. Life, as a matter of fact, I've said this before, and I haven't said it in a long time, but my wife and I have not been on a vacation, quote unquote, in over a decade. I mean, our last real vacation was somewhere in the, you know, the mid-2000s, right? I mean, about 2005. Ever since then, we went back to school, we got educated more, we got, you know, more engaged in professions and growing and getting engaged in, you know, our different movements and so forth. I mean, we've actually, you know, our focus had shifted from being, you know, because we lived in Hawaii, we met in Hawaii, and you know, every other weekend, at least once a month, we would go to a different island and vacation. And, you know, our life was working for our vacations. We weren't saving anything. We weren't able to, you know, well, we did a lot. We had a lot of experiences. But the reality is we didn't possess the power of knowledge. We didn't possess the power of, you know, our self-reliance and those types of things. And we realized that, you know, it's maybe time to actually start acting like an adult and being accountable and living every day accountable to what we need to be doing. And, you know, kind of like that doctor that's watching somebody bleed out, if he doesn't step in and stop that, you know, then don't we share the liability of what's going on? Yes, we do. We actually have far more fault and blame on our own shoulders. Listening to entertainment isn't going to get you there. Listening to Rush, listening to Beck or Levin or any of these folks isn't going to get you there because they're just trying to entertain you. They're trying to keep you engaged and keeping you on, you know, on point on, oh, how bad it is. As I always say, if you're not engaged in the solution, you're a part of the problem. So, folks, it's time that we stop being a part of the problem. So when we come back, what I want to do is I kind of want to point out some of the things, and we'll do this tomorrow, too, for Feedback Friday.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So one of the most satisfying things a person can go through is when they've accomplished something, when you're building something and you've built it and you're done and you look at it and you did the due diligence, you followed the, you know, the proper processes in, you know, building something, doing something, making something, creating something, and or contributing. Even in contributing, people get this self-satisfaction that they were a part of something bigger than themselves, or that they actually were able to do something, you know, in creating, you know, this one thing. But we can't rest on our laurels. In other words, even though you may have done one thing, that does not make your life. You know, when if you could, you would do more and more and more if you really enjoyed that. And I believe that when people are taught, you know, and learn to appreciate their productivity and learn to appreciate what they can do, and realize, I mean, I don't know if there's a dopamine or this, you know, releasing of a feel good in your brain, but I do believe that the most satisfying thing a person can do is actually becoming self-sustaining, being able to provide for themselves. But nobody ever places context to this, and nobody ever helps you actually learn. And if you don't learn this at a young age, you kind of don't recognize it when you're older, when you do something and it doesn't mean much to you. You have to learn to appreciate the work that you did in putting into something. Well, I was, you know, I had to do that. What I want to do is I just want to play. I just want to party. Well, that is the problem with our society. Now, one of the things that, you know, I definitely want to get into, but I'm not ready to do it now, but you know, there's a discussion that's worth having regarding, you know, how we are all individually divided and how we separate ourselves and categorize ourselves constantly. I mean, I don't know, you know how people live their lives, but I do know that everybody has their biases. Everybody has their own categories, their comfort zones, and so forth. But anyway, what I want to do is I actually, because I was thinking about this, when I was looking at all of the different states, I go, you know, there are certain states that have I'll just say, this opportunity of being owned. And when you look at, and I'll give you a great example, a state that is owned not by the people, but by some bad people, is Nevada. Now, Nevada, you know, was a state that, you know, didn't have hardly anything until Las Vegas came around. It was just a state that you had to travel through to get to California or parts of California if you didn't want to go across the southern route or what have you. But, I mean, what was in Nevada? As a matter of fact, Nevada's government basically got on board with this idea of starting to store because they just had vast areas of nothing. And they said, you know what, we should be, you know, we should find a repository, you know, or become the nation's repository of nuclear waste. And so, you know, Nevada was a very small populated state until Las Vegas came along. And now if you look at Las Vegas, I mean, it is the driving control of Nevada. If you've never been to Nevada, if you never talked to anybody in Nevada, they will tell you that Las Vegas is controlled by, or I should say Nevada is controlled by Las Vegas. But who controls the politics of Las Vegas? Well, it's the corrupt mobs. It is those who actually have the money. He who pays in our government, in our monarchical party, democratic, socialistic government, he who pays the piper calls the tunes. And so this is why you see how Nevada has actually gone from a red state to a blue state. And now they're actually making Nevada a hard blue state. Now, there's a solution to that. Why doesn't the rest of Nevada say, let's just cut off that tip, you know, and let it bleed on its own. And we will, you know, kind of sever our relationship. Well, you know what? You really need to plan with a good distance. In other words, you don't want to be close to the suburbs of Las Vegas. So in other words, you kind of want to kind of trim off enough to where, you know, in the next few years, Nevada won't be able to, or I should say Las Vegas won't be able to permeate itself into your state. Because if you look at all of the other places around Nevada, Lake Havasaw is down in the Arizona-California boundary, but, you know, when you have Las Vegas close by, then people can start going and making investments and start, you know, venturing out into the outskirts, even if it's in a different state. And so that's what's happened. I mean, if you look at Denver and how Denver came to be, well, it started in Denver, and then people started creating their own little communities. But because Denver was the primary trek, or it was the primary stop along that trek across the Rockies to get to the West Coast, you know, people came along and they got there, and they, you know, this was the day when they didn't have semis and paved highways. You actually had to, you know, drive your wagon across those mountains. And when you got to Denver and you looked at those mountains, you go, you know what? This looks like a good place to stay. As I've told people, Denver is a town that was created by quitters, people that, you know, wanted to get to the West Coast, and they realized this last obstacle, these Rockies that they had to overcome. They go, it was tough enough coming across this prairie. Anyway, Anyway, it's all about the ease of politically owning a state because it only takes money. Now that we have America up for sale, the point I'm trying to make, and this is why we really need to get, and I know Paul Venable and his crew, if I want to say that, it's probably really just Paul Venable. We need to get this because there's a big demand in Missouri, and I believe there's a big demand in every state, but we have a petition coming forward that will actually challenge the veracity and the ability for any foreigner, any foreign state, any foreign entity from owning any U.S. property, asset, business, resource, what have you. It is unconstitutional. They do not have the constitutional requirement for the federal government in every state is to maintain sovereignty, and selling out, literally selling property, selling a business to a foreign entity is antithetical to supporting and maintaining our sovereignty. There has never been an amendment in the Constitution that would allow them to do this. And the fact that they're doing this is unacceptable. And so when we look at who's buying up your state, let's look at some of the states that are really, really susceptible. The Dakotas, Wyoming. Montana is kind of an interesting bear. It's a huge state. And it, you know, it does, but they don't have a lot of folks. They have two representatives. But Montana could easily be bought up. But it's because of its size, it's kind of, I just think it would be very expensive for somebody to really come in there and buy it up. But these little smaller states that have small population and can easily be influenced one way or the other by manipulation, financial manipulation, and so forth, because that's what we're seeing. The big problem with getting state legislatures to do what they're supposed to do is the corruption that, oh, well, we don't want to have to give up the federal money that we shouldn't be getting in the first place. They literally say that. Well, what are we going to do about the money we get from the federal government? That's free money. Folks, if you heard what came across their lips when they say these things, it would just inflame you. So New Mexico, when we look at Wyoming, we look at Nevada, we look at Arizona, we look at all these types of states that have, you know, a smaller population compared to the other states, to where somebody could easily come in and start, you know, like what happened in Nevada, where the organized crime moved in and they took over the state. Well, what's to keep that from happening in some of these other states? Not much at all, other than the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't allow this. This is why we have to really start looking at republicanism and start understanding you have the right to choose your representative. If somebody that's not in your county is actually throwing money into your county political races, then they're a foreigner influencing your election. And foreign influence needs to be really defined in your state and in your county laws so that they will stop allowing foreign investment. Folks, we've got a lot to cover, and I got a lot of rants to get into before we get the ratification debates, but we're getting to it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.